Bismillah, walhamdulillah, wa salatu wa salam ala Rasulillah, wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa man wala. So just as we're getting started, we're gonna probably go just for about like 45 minutes, 50 minutes today. I'm gonna give you kind of like a quick walkthrough of what a day in Ramadan looks like. We have Ramadan starting tonight. So in Islam, as a tradition, the night precedes the day. So the first day of fasting for Ramadan is tomorrow, but the first night of Ramadan is tonight, right? So tomorrow night would be the second night. So the night precedes the day in Islam as a religion. Does that make sense? So we're gonna look at a particular set of verses in the Quran from the second chapter that's called the Al-Baqarah, which translates as the cow. In the kind of Mosaic narrative, there's an instance that deals with a cow that we'll talk about some months from now. But we're gonna look at the verses that talk about fasting and kind of break those down. So if anybody wants to open up, if you have like a hard copy or on your phone, if you just look at the second chapter, Baqarah, from verse 183 onwards, you can come in. You look scared when you walked in. It's okay. Yeah, they're just Muslims. Don't be scared of them. You're one too. So if you look at 183 and the few verses after that, those are the ones that talk about fasting. Does anybody want to read from 183 onwards? You got it open? Yeah, you want to read?
You who believe, fasting is prescribed for you, and it was prescribed for those before you, so that you may be mindful of God. Fast for a specific number of days, but if one of you is ill or on a journey, then on other days later. For those who can fast only with extreme difficulty, there is a way to compensate. Feed a needy person, but if anyone does good of his own accord, it is better for him, and fasting is better for you, if only you knew. It was in the month of Ramadan that the Quran was revealed as guidance for mankind, clear messages giving guidance and distinguishing between right and wrong. So any one of you who sees in that month should fast, and anyone who is ill or on a journey should make up for the lost days by fasting on other days later. God wants ease for you, not hardship. He wants you to complete the prescribed period and to glorify him for having guided you, so that you may be thankful. Prophet, if my servants ask you about me, I am near. I respond to those who call me, so let them respond to me, and believe in me, so that they may be rightly guided.
Keep going. You can keep going, it's the last one. 187.
Yeah, you believers are permitted to lie with your wives during the night of the fast. They are close as garments to you, as you are to them. God was aware that you were betraying yourselves, so he turned to you in mercy and pardoned you. Now you can lie with them. Seek what God has ordained for you. Eat and drink until the white thread of dawn becomes distinct from the black, then fast until nightfall. Do not lie with them during the nights of your devotional retreat in the mosques. These are the bounds set by God, so do not go near them. In this way, God makes his messages clear to people that they may guard themselves against doing wrong.
Okay, so this set of verses starts to create a framework around the practice of fasting, and it also introduces the term Ramadan and aligns it with the word Quran. Right, so all of these verses, you could kind of look at them individually, but you can also look at them separately from one another. And how we did when we talked about wudu, like our ritual washing, what we want to be able to do is kind of go into this a little bit more than just a laundry list of do's and don'ts. So you can build a relationship with this at a level that helps you to understand, well, what's the basis of this? Where is it coming from? And what are not just the external mechanics to it, which are important, but how does that align to its relationship with what's inward? And so if you look at this verse 183 of the second chapter, that verse becomes the basis for the obligation of fasting in Ramadan. And there's a bunch of different types of fasts in Islam. All of them are not obligatory. So if you weren't here like a few weeks ago, we talked about the different categories that you could fit things into. So we had obligations. These were the fard. And this is like the fast of Ramadan fits into this. You then have what are the wajib, right? That was the lesser category of obligation. And those are makeup fasts from Ramadan. You have established, like confirmed prophetic ones. And these are sunnah. These are like the 10th of Muharram. And the 9th, the day of Adha, like there's others, right? But just to give you an idea, then there's recommended ones. Like we do Mondays and Thursday, iftar's here. There's the middle days of the month, the 13th, 14th, and 15th. And every other day. This was like the tradition of the Prophet David. Right, and then there's ones that are prohibited and disliked. Like you can't fast on the days of Eid, on those holidays. You're not allowed to fast, right? But just to broaden the idea that there's not just an obligatory fast, there's other types of fasts as well. Does that make sense? So this verse that we're looking at, it says in the Arabic, Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu kutiba alaykumus siyamu kama kutiba ala alladhina min qablikum la'allakum tattaqun, that O you who believe, fasting has been written for you as it was written for those that came before you, so that you might attain this thing that's called taqwa, that we'll talk about in a little bit. But embedded within it, it now links the relationship of the outward and the inward. And so it's establishing the fast of Ramadan. When we looked at, if you remember, the verse that talked about what is obligatory for you to wash when you are washing up for prayer in your wudu, if you guys remember that. Similarly, like you want to understand how this verse functions. So when you have this construct in the Quran that addresses people as people of faith, O you who believe, O you who have faith, people of iman, it's usually premising now an act that is legalistic or ritualistic, like a thing you do as a Muslim. It juxtaposes itself to verses that are premised with the phrase Ya ayyuhannas, O mankind. Meaning like all of humanity is referenced versus now narrowing it to people who follow Islam. So right off the bat, it's an obligation for Muslims. It's not an obligation, Islam says, for not Muslims, because Islam can't obligate non-Muslims to do things, right? So that Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu is making a reference particularly, and when you read that, O you who believe, O people of faith, in the Arabic or the translation, it's talking to that specific group of people in terms of what's going to come next. One of the ways that a verse indicates something is an obligation is now with the next word that comes. It says, kutiba alaykum, that written upon you. So the idea that is denoted from that Arabic word of something being prescribed or written upon you, if you have that in a verse, it is usually denoting that what that verse is telling you is something that is an obligation to be performed. Does that make sense? Yeah, are people with me on that? Right, so when people are trying to engage and draw meaning and extrapolate meaning from the text, they're looking at the language utilized. They're trying to not just look at it reductively, but to start to formulate methodologies. And it says, well, here, this means this and denotes this. So that kutiba alaykum is what becomes a basis also of this is an obligation, right? This is something that you have to do. It creates a link to previous communities. Kutiba alaykum siyam. So the word siyam in Arabic is the plural of the word saum. And when you have this root of sama in Arabic, it is denoting abstaining from something. Like if we looked at the chapter of Mary, peace be upon her, there's a chapter in the Quran named after Mary, the mother of Jesus, peace be upon both of them, Surat al-Maryam. And in like the 20s of that chapter, there's a verse where Mary is described as being one who is abstaining from talking, right? She is pregnant with Jesus and she has a fast that's a fast of speech. But the Arabic is describing her through this word. So it's not just in general in reference to abstaining from food and drink, which we do in Ramadan, but the word itself is in reference to an abstention from something that you would just normally be permitted to do, right? Like you can eat and you can drink and you can talk and you can do all these things. But when you are doing this kind of abstaining, you're abstaining from something that otherwise would be a fine thing to do, right? Mary can talk if she wants to, but since she is engaging in this mandated upon her, she has a psalm of speech. Does that make sense? So this is the singular. When somebody's talking about fasting in Arabic, they're going to use the word psalm. And the plural is siyam. And one who is fasting is called the sa'im. Yeah, everybody with me? You sure? Yeah, we didn't start fasting yet, so you can't be dead tired. I'm like really jet lagged, just so you know. I went to Turkey, and then from Turkey I came back here for a couple of days, and then we went to Mecca and Medina. We just didn't sleep, some of you came, and I came back here, and also just haven't slept. And then my son, he like got in our bed last night at midnight, and he like poked me in my eye, and he was like, Baba, I'm in bed with you. I was like, thanks, man. I thought some other dude got into my bed. And like every couple of hours, I don't know if you have little kids in your life, but my son, he like doesn't sleep like a normal human being. He likes to cuddle, but his cuddling is very weird. So he'll try to wrap his arm around me, but his arm will go like across my face like this, sometimes like in my mouth. What is going on? How is it possible that every time you do it, somehow your fist goes into my mouth? So that's kind of where I'm at right now. So this is, in that verse, fasting has been prescribed for you. This is the word, fasting. It's saying, it means something. It's an abstention from an Islamic standpoint from things that you would normally be permitted to do. Right? That's the baseline of it, saum. Kutiba alaykum al-siyam kama like kutiba alaykum al-siyam kama kutiba ala alladhina min qablikum, as it was for those that came before you. So it's not a new practice in the sense that Islam claims that we are the first to ever fast, but it's building a link now to previous traditions, saying that this is a time-tested act, a spiritual exercise that was done also by communities that came before you. لَعَلَّكُمْ, so that you might perhaps. It doesn't say definitively. The لَعَلَّكُمْ in the Quran, it means that potentially. Like, the opportunity is there that you might attain this thing of taqwa. Taqwa is a key value in Islam. And just like we said over the course of some weeks that you want to not get lost in the Arabic, like you can say fasting. You don't have to walk around and say siyam and saum and these kinds of things, right? If you go upstairs and you say to somebody tomorrow, how was your saum today? Like most people are like, what are you talking about, right? And you just say, how was your fasting, right? You might say Ramadan, like the way most people know the word Ramadan, whether they're Muslim or not, it's carried over into the English language. Because what are you going to say? How is the ninth month of the lunar calendar on for Muslims going for you? No, you're going to say Ramadan because it means Ramadan. The word taqwa, it is something you want to engage in the same way that you just utilize it in its Arabic, because it allows for there to be that much more depth to its meaning if you can maintain it in this way, right? And on pretty much like every other, like you read the Quran, it's not a linear text. You know, it doesn't say here's the beginning, middle, and end of a story, but it gives you details and then it pulls you back into core values. And there's a constant revisiting of this value that is called taqwa. It keeps coming up again and again and again. And it's one of the foundational values. You can call it a virtue if you want, but it's a foundational value, a virtue of Islam. This thing called taqwa. Its root in Arabic is wiqaya, which denotes a shield. And so taqwa in and of itself gets translated as consciousness, awareness, mindfulness, but it's a consciousness or awareness or mindfulness that's rooted in a consciousness of the divine. There's an ethical imperative rooted in that state of mindfulness, and it's meant to be something that exists within you, the way faith exists within you. There's a consciousness that exists within you that protects you. It shields you from things that are wrong, right? So if I was walking down the street and there's a pothole in the middle of the street, taqwa is what is the element within me that's going to say, hey, there's a hole coming. Don't fall in the hole, right? Protect yourself from it. You see what I mean? The way that it is given a description in our tradition is as if you are walking with like your clothes through a field filled with thorned bushes. How would you walk in that way? So that the thorns aren't kind of pricking at you or kind of pulling at your clothes or unraveling the threads or piercing at your skin. You'd walk with a certain air of delicacy. Right? There's mindfulness to it. You're not going to just run through a bush of thorned roses and then at the end be like, what happened to my arm? But if you know that those things are there, you're going to walk with a certain sense of awareness. That's what taqwa is, right? You have a recognition. There's not just a default setting of mindlessness, but there's a mindfulness that you're kind of moving through things with, right? And what it's saying is that this practice of fasting, that if it is done the way that it's intended to be done, then its yield is going to be this thing, right? How does that work for us? I started fasting when I was like 12 years old. And in my home, we're from Kashmir, South Asian. People eat dates a lot. I don't know if you all grow up eating dates, but, you know, I didn't really like dates when I was younger. And my parents, they love dates. And they would be eating dates like crazy. My dad would be throwing these things in his cornflakes. And he would be like, you eat some too. Aside from the fact that I don't want to eat cornflakes, I definitely didn't want to eat cornflakes with dates in them. They look like cockroaches to me. And it was not appetizing in any which way. And then when I started fasting, I did not eat anything sweeter in my life than a date that I broke my fast on. And when I started to fast and I drank water at the end of the fast, I did not drink water that was more refreshing than that water. But the idea was not to just be aware of the freshness of the water or the sweet of the date. The idea was to be aware of the ability to be aware of those things. Do you understand? That's what consciousness is. You can sit and throw food in your mouth and have no mindfulness to your eating. Or you can sit and you can consume and it can actually be a spiritual act. You can be in a place where there's not paranoia. It's not that you are walking on eggshells every step that you take, but you can walk in a way where you actually have awareness to what it is that you're doing. And so the act of fasting in and of itself is something that brings this. Kutiba alaykumus siyam is important to understand because it's also giving an indication that it's not rooted just in the singular, it's in the plural. Meaning the first time you fast, you're going to probably get a headache, right? It's not that right at the onset you do it one time and it yields this. You got to do it a bunch of times. You get over the physicality of it. You build a relationship with the mechanics of it. And then as the spiritual exercise builds itself, it will give you the opportunity to do this. There's a hadith, a saying of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, where he says some people will fast and they get nothing out of it other than just hunger in their stomach and thirst in their throats. Right? And we're going to talk about where some of that comes from. But just so you have a base understanding of what the verse is saying, these are what these words mean and this is what it's talking about. Kutiba alaykumus siyam kama kutiba ala alladhina min qablikum la'allakum tattaqun. Fasting was written for you as it was for those who came before you, so you could have this thing of taqwa, this thing of awareness, consciousness. It wakes you up. It kind of helps, right? Probably tomorrow or on Friday, if you come to iftar here, when we break our fast, I'm going to do the pre-iftar halakha, the program. I'm going to talk about the 10 benefits of hunger, right? So there's a scholar in our religious history, his name is Imam Ghazali. Rahimahullah is like known as one of the great spiritual masters of our religion. He writes in one of his books a list of the 10 benefits of hunger. And one of the benefits that he starts off with is that he says hunger, but this is a voluntary hunger, right? It's not a forced hunger. You know, there's a difference between the two because there's hadith where the Prophet Muhammad talks about how difficult it is for people who don't have food, right? May Allah make things easy for them. But the first benefit that Imam Ghazali talks about is that hunger is a means to kind of cleanse your heart, but also to increase your intuition, right? It deepens perception. It makes you more attentive in different ways. Because you're not like in a daze, you know? If you ever like eat crazy, I'll tell you, I'm a mess today. You know what I mean? I met two really amazing people who came to see me. This woman who took her shahada a month ago. I never met them before. They bought me half a dozen donuts. I don't know why they bought me half a dozen donuts. And I was about to eat all of these things. So I ate one and then I walked around trying to get people to eat these donuts. And people took some of them, but then they left them. And then I ate the rest of them. And then I went up to where these students were having an event upstairs on the 9th floor. And they had like Levain Bakery gave them free cookies. Plus Domino's pizza. So I ate some of that too. And that was all in the time span of about 45 minutes. I feel so gross right now. This is like the stupidest idea before Ramadan to do these things. But, you know, alhamdulillah. It's going to impact like and create this kind of fogginess, right? That you've probably eaten in that way where it leaves you just like delirious, right? So the idea is that there is this intrinsic link And one of the ways to increase this is to understand how you interject awareness by being in control. And any spiritual diet in an Islamic spiritual book is going to include this idea that if you have the ability to control your stomach, you have the ability to likely control everything. That's just something that's emphasized again and again and again. It's not a practice that is about, hey, let's just drain you of your energy. But the idea is that it's supposed to yield this through this. The first level of it is that you're fasting from what's permissible. And then you get to a frame as you relate to the physicality that you're now fasting from what's impermissible, right? I get control and I'm like, I can't eat, I can't drink. And it now opens the door for me to say, hey, I'm not gonna gossip. I'm not gonna curse. I'm not gonna, you know, be arrogant or complain unnecessarily or be negative. You see what I mean? Does that make sense? Anybody have any questions on this? So somebody asks you, why do Muslims fast? It's because of this verse in the second chapter that says, like, fasting has been written for you. And then if they ask you what's the point of it, it's so that you can do this. It's not because your mother said to do it. It's not because everybody in my family does it. It's not because we want to be the only strange person in my office or my class who is not eating anything and pretending like my breath doesn't smell bad as a result of it. It's because you want to attain awareness, consciousness. You're going to wake up your heart, right? It's not about empty stomachs. It's about full hearts. That's the idea of this as a practice. So I want to really quickly just run you through what a typical schedule looks like. In Ramadan, it comes from the Arabic root Ramada, which means to like burn something or scorch something. So the Islamic calendar is rooted in months that predate Islam. And this is a lunar calendar, so Ramadan itself is actually experienced by most of us, likely in multiple seasons over the course of our lifespans, a couple of times, right? I'm 40 years old, you know, and I don't know how long I'm gonna be alive, right? Who knows? Allah make the best of our deeds the last of our deeds. But likely, most of us in this room have statistically a good chance of living until we're like 60, 70 years old, right? Maybe a little older. So you could probably experience Ramadan in your adult life at least twice in every single time and season of the year, right? And there's equity in this, because we're in New York, where right now it's not like so long. In comparison to, you could go to some parts of Europe where I get people who reach out to me and they're like, hey man, Maghrib here is at 10 o'clock, right, sunset, and Isha is at midnight, and Fajr is at 2 in the morning, what should we do? And I'm like, hey man, I'm not from the Netherlands, you need to ask somebody over there, because that's not my place to tell you, you know, someone has to understand the locale and so many other things. But they have like a really long day of fasting that we don't have. Right, our winter is very short, so December, Maghrib's at like 4 something in the afternoon, and so it kind of balances itself out here the way it does in other times of the year. So the idea here is that it's like a spiritual heating. You know, you are meant to be a malleable person. You're not meant to be fixed. The fundamental idea is that it's scorching like things that are things we've done that are wrong in our life. But in the same idea, it's like molding and helping you to reach your potential best, right? That's Ramadan. So, because the night precedes the day, if we're looking at like night and day one of Ramadan, it's gonna start where we just started, with the Maghrib prayer, which is the fourth prayer of the day. We just prayed that at sunset. This is where you will also break your fast, but we'll talk about that in the context at the end of day one, there's not that on night one, because like the night precedes the day in our calendar in Islam. So you're gonna then have Isha, and Isha is the night prayer, the fifth prayer of the day. We're gonna pray that upstairs at around 8:25. You all should definitely come and, you know, pray with us, like be a part of it. If you're still learning the steps of the prayer, you can follow along with people. And there's a unique prayer that takes place in Ramadan in the Sunni tradition of Islam that's called Taraweeh. The root of this is Rawaha, and that means to rest. So this prayer is unique in that people pray it in different units. Some will pray it in 8 cycles, 8 rak'ahs. Some will pray it in 20. And some pray 36. What it is, we'll talk about next week, like the wisdoms, the spiritual benefits of it, why this is done. Why there's an opinion of 36 is the people of Medina, the Prophet Muhammad's city, they prayed 36. Because in Mecca, they prayed 20. And the resting that is here, right? This means to rest. These are prayed in 2 units each in sets of 4. So you pray 2, and then you stand up and pray another 2. And then you take a rest after each 4 that you've done. Does that make sense? That's why it's called Taraweeh, because you're resting in between. So what they would do in Mecca is they would pray 4, and then they would do what's called the Tawaf of the Kaaba. They would walk around the Kaaba 7 times. The way, if you've ever seen the black cube in Mecca, the Kaaba, and people who go for pilgrimage, right? Some of you just went with us, and we walked around the Kaaba 7 times, right? They would do that in between every 4 rak'ahs being prayed. So after 4, they do it, then after 8, then after 12, then after 16. So in Medina, because they couldn't do the tawaf of the Kaaba, they would instead pray another 4 rak'ahs to compensate. So there's 36, right? People will debate, like, should we pray 8 or 20, right? Nobody ever is like, hey, why don't we just do 36, you know? But it's usually between this or that. The idea is that you just want to pray something. When you go upstairs, like, people are going to be praying this. And when they go on this marathon, if you've never prayed it before, right? You're new to Islam, you're exploring Islam. They pray Isha, and it's nice, and it goes for like 6 minutes. And then someone's like, hey, join in this Taraweeh thing. And you're like, okay. And then they pray 20 of these things, and you're standing there for an hour. You're like, what did I just walk into, man? And nobody explained it to you. This is what they're doing. There's not a minimum of what you have to read in this. You can pray it in your home. You don't have to pray it in congregation. You can go to different communities, and culturally they will do it differently. So if you go to a Turkish community, for example, when they pray it, they'll pray 20, but they'll read like the shortest chapters of the Quran in each unit of prayer. So it goes like really quick. It's amazing, right? Some people will try to read one whole part of the Quran in each night, so they can read an entire completion of the Quran with the congregation. And that takes about like 45 minutes or so. That's not a necessity. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what's going to happen upstairs in like 30 minutes. Then after this, like, come sleep. You want to sleep well. If you are going to fast, especially if our fast starts at 5:45, and goes till about 7, and then over the course of the month, it's gonna be longer on both ends of the day, because the day is getting longer. Your sleep is going to be very important in the course of how you respond to the day. One of the benefits of fasting that we'll talk about on Friday is that eating less and being controlled in the quality and quantity of your eating physiologically will require you to also sleep less. So one of the reasons that we fast in Ramadan is not that the fasting just stops at sunset, but a purpose of the fasting is that it enables us to sleep less so that we can actually pray at night in Ramadan. And when you get over like the physicality of it in the first few days, you know, the tiredness, your body will adjust. After about 3 or 4 days, you won't feel the hunger and thirst anymore. Unless like in between these times, you're not eating sensibly or drinking sensibly. It's not the time to gorge or go like deep fried foods or like compensate for all of the, you know, caffeine you didn't drink and then it ruins your life, right? But you have to think about it seriously. It's a spiritual act. So if you turn into something animalistic at sunset, then you haven't necessarily tamed the ego. You let the ego take control of you as soon as it had capacity to do so. You see? So here you want to sleep well, and what's going to happen when you wake up, you're gonna have a meal that's called suhoor. Right? Suhoor is a pre-dawn meal. There's a lot of blessing in it in our tradition, right? We have a narration in the hadith where the Prophet, peace be upon him, he says in the imperative, tasahharu, eat the suhoor. Right? He's saying it like, do this, tasahharu. Then he says, eat the suhoor, inna fis suhoor barakah, that indeed in this meal, there's blessing to it. Even if it's just a sip of water, you know? You think about it physiologically, you get up in the morning, you get your metabolism going, you're in a place where you're starting the day mindfully, I gotta go through a whole day. This is not the time to eat like all kinds of crazy gross things, right? It's a time to say, what's gonna sustain me? How do I start to bring strategy and plan into my physical wellness routine? This can take place anytime before the time of the Fajr prayer, which is at true dawn. So our fast starts not when you've prayed this, but at true dawn, when the light from the sun is visible above the horizon. So that's where that last verse that we read, it talks about the threads, right? The black thread of the night and the white thread of the day, like separating from each other. You can eat anytime from here until here. This is many hours, right? This is at 7:10, this is at 5:45. So you wanna think, how do I kind of acclimate and adjust to this? And then the rest of the day is your other prayers, Dhuhr, Asr, and then at Maghrib, this is the end of day one, you are going to have here what's called Iftar, and that's just the breaking of your fast. Right? This can be done traditionally on dates and water. It's not meant to be like, again, a gorging of a meal. You'll find different places will do this in different ways. There will be different cultural customs, traditional familial customs, but it is something that you want to think now will repeat as a cycle for 30 days in a row, right? And where and how these things all kind of fit in are going to be a very subjective decision. Because in the same time, you got to go to school, you got to go to work, you got to do all these different things. But it's a basic skeleton of what's taking place. Any questions on this? Yeah. You can leave whenever you want to. Yeah, you can leave whenever you want. You don't have to stay for the whole 20. You can leave whenever you'd like. Yeah.
Kind of related to that. If you start your Dadaway material with a certain amount of dhokha in community together, and then you like take some time, go home, a lot of time passes more or less, and then you want to continue the Dadaway, is that still?
Yeah, you could do that. You can go home, pray at home, and do what you gotta do, right? Like here in the IC, a lot of our staff, we're serving the community. So we are not necessarily participating as much as we can in the ways, and that's fine, that's like our job and we love to do it, alhamdulillah. But then we'll at times either be able to participate on different days of the week, or we'll just go home and do certain things. It's not an obligation, right? Assalamu alaikum, how are you? It's not an obligatory prayer, it's a recommended prayer, right? So if you don't do it, you're not, it's not like you're missing one of the five daily prayers, right? But the idea behind this is also still attached to that value of taqwa, right? You're praying in the late nights so that you're kind of creating wakefulness in your heart. You know, you're in a place where it's a source of illumination. You're reading Quran, you're hearing Quran. There's different blessings in this. This is a skeleton here. So when we're now engaged between the time of Fajr till Maghrib, the basic act of fasting is about no food, no drink, and no intimacy with one's spouse. And these two things are about consumption that go in through any kind of your body cavities, right? So it's not just like, I can't eat food and drink, but for example, I take allergy medicines every night. I take a Zyrtec and I use nasal cort. The nasal cort, when I put in my nose, like it is going in through my nostrils, down my throat, and I couldn't do that during the day, for example. Does that make sense? Smoking is not something that one is allowed to do for the same reason, right? There's nothing that you're consuming in the course of your day. So you could literally just sleep the whole day. I'm not saying you should do that, but you could sleep the entire day and you will have fasted in Islam. The idea is that it's an abstaining. It's not necessarily like an active kind of engagement, right? The way when you pray, and we talked about wudu for like 4 weeks, right? You better know wudu now because we talked about a lot. You know, you got to wash up different things. You got to find a clean place. You got to make sure you're wearing clothes that you can pray in. You're facing in the direction of the Kaaba. All this kinds of stuff, right? You don't have to do any of that when you're fasting. When you're fasting, you're in a place where you could just sit in your room and not eat or drink anything the whole day and you will have fasted. You don't want to make that your fast, but you want to get accustomed also to the first parts of it, which in the first days are very physical, right? There is a recommendation, well, you'll see in the last 10 nights of Ramadan, people are both instructed, but also they are motivated to just pray a lot more in the last 10 nights of Ramadan. But by design, there's nothing that is without meaning in God's plan. So those first 10 nights are different from the last 10 nights, because in the first 10 nights, you're getting used to all of this. You're trying to like figure out, how do I relate to no coffee, to no this, to no that? You see what I mean? I don't know why it is, but you know, it's the blessing of Ramadan that Muslims get really excited about this. And people who are not Muslim, like, what's wrong with you people? You know? But it's, man, I'm so excited, Ramadan's here. You're excited to not eat any food or drink any water for 14 hours straight. Yeah, it's amazing, you know? But what's happening in the practice that makes it amazing is that you are actually tapping into what makes you essentially human, which is to live with wakefulness. You're not living in a state that is purely rooted in the satiation of your stomach or your sexual organs, but you're in a place where everything is controlled. You have reclaimed the ability to determine why and how you will choose your choices. And self-restraint is not about being kind of in an air of trepidation when you walk, but you live on your own terms. You don't live on your stomach's terms. You see what I mean? Does that make sense? And that's why people love it, Because you want to be somebody who lives with wakefulness. You don't want to live like a cow, right? That's like what the Quran says. It makes the comparison. Ula'ika kal an'am, it says. They're like the cows, right? The ones who... أَفَرَأَيْتَ مَنِ اتَّخَذَ إِلَاهُ هَوَىٰ. Have you seen the one who takes their whims, their desires as being their Lord, right? You know, have you, I mean, look at, like, literally, I'm not saying this about you. I just told you what I ate in the hour before we started talking to each other. I clearly need Ramadan in my life. Do you know what I mean? Right? This is no sense whatsoever, you know? But this is what people are celebrating. They're celebrating the ability to have clarity. They're not making decisions that are just simply in terms of immediate gratification, making decisions in the pursuit of something that's much bigger than that, contentment, right? Any questions on any of this? Yeah.
So, on the medication stuff, if you use
eye drops are fine. Yeah, because you can put like contacts, contact lens solutions, these kinds of things in your eyes. Yeah. We do 20 here. Yeah. But it would go at the same, like if people did 8, they're just dividing what they would have divided over 20 over 8, right? So they pretty much read the same stuff. But yeah. We should not end very late. If we end very late, I'm gonna yell at the guys leading the prayer. That means they're going too slow. But we will pray Isha by like 8:26 it comes in, we'll call the Adhan. So by 8:40 we'll be done with Isha. Maybe 8:45 we'll start praying Salatul Tarawih, the Tarawih prayer. And anywhere from an hour or so to an hour and 15 minutes. Because if they're reading one part of it and a little bit more, but likely just one part to it. It's 20 pages of the Quran. And so it shouldn't take like, you know, 2.5 hours to do it. And you want to be patient with these guys, right? I mean, really think about it, subhanAllah. They know every single word in the Quran. They've memorized it by heart. That's crazy to think about. You know what I mean? Right? And may Allah protect all of the guardians of his book. It's really remarkable as a feat. And it's no joke to get behind somebody who's leading like a few hundred people, let alone so many more every night. So I want to encourage people, right? I'm a little bit obnoxious, so don't be like me. But, you know, say thank you to them, right? Encourage them with kind words. And where you can stay, you want to be measured, right? You don't want to do things without strategy. But it makes a difference. If you're leaving for a reason that is not like, you know, you don't have to leave, then don't leave. Because now when these guys turn around and they see the lines are lesser in number than more in number, it's just a different motivation when you can see that your community is behind you versus like they all left. When you leave, which is also fine, just be mindful people are still praying in the room, right? So you want to keep voices down and just kind of be mindful of that part to it as well. Any other questions? Yeah. Can you say it again? Asthma inhalers? Yeah, so there's different opinions on an asthma inhaler. People would say no because you're consuming through like your mouth and it's going past your throat. So essentially anything that goes past your throat. We'll talk about it in more detail next week, right? Because you're going to make wudu. And you can wash out your mouth, but you don't want to swallow anything, right? So there's some shuyukh who would say an asthma inhaler is fine because it's going into your lungs. It's not kind of, you know, like very definitively. Allah knows best, right? There's different opinions on it. Yeah. If you have like medicated related reason as to why you have to do something, then you got to do that. You know, you take that as a precedent. Anything else? Yeah, yeah.
Just want to suggest to people, remind them please to stay hydrated. Because a lot of times we focus on the food aspect, but people like the hydration aspect. And I find that that's been more important for me and a lot of people.
We have a prophetic tradition that recommends 1/3 food, for your stomach, one third water, and then one third air, like when you're having a meal, right? So it means like you're not eating to your full, but also means you should be drinking as much water as you're eating food, right? You need to stay hydrated, you know, in these ways. Yeah. And we'll talk about like the specifics, how we did with wudu, the do's and don'ts next week, and kind of get into some of this a little bit more. And then over the course of Ramadan, we talked a lot about wudu in the beginning part of the class, so in the first few weeks. So we'll start to talk about like prayer in general, like how that functions, get a little bit more into the practical aspects of being Muslim. If you weren't here last time we met, we read an article as kind of a shift from like the legalistic aspects. There was called The Islam and the Cultural Imperative by Dr. Omar Farouk Abdullah, which essentially is saying like Islam exists in various cultures, and to be Muslim doesn't mean you commit a cultural apostasy, right? You stay true to your cultural identity. It's a really great article. If you weren't here last time we met, you should take a look at that. Okay, so we're gonna pause. If people wanna go upstairs, you're more than welcome to stay down here too, if you like, but we're gonna pray upstairs today instead of down here. And we'll see everybody next week at 6 o'clock, not 7. We'll do the essentials class here at 6. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.